On this episode of the InsurTech Geek Podcast, talking about bridging the gap between tech and tradition and insurance strategies with Amin Rajan from AMAX Auto Insurance. The InsurTech Geek Podcast, powered by JB Knowledge, is all about technology that's transforming and disrupting the insurance world. We'll be interviewing guests and doing deep dives into specific tech we see changing the industry. We're taking you on a journey through insurance tech, so enjoy the ride and geek out. And we're back with another great episode of the InsurTech Geek Podcast. That's InsurTech without an E. That's right. Lisa Wardlaw, she won finally, and we got rid of the E. She hated the E, and we got rid of the E. What a mess. It's all good. It's actually been shockingly easy to drop the E, Rob.
Shockingly easy. Wow. Okay. I would have thought that was like, I think 5 years ago, James, that was like a big, and we've all kind of moved on. And some of us are just licking our wounds, but
yeah, it's just like, you know, those, it's like VHS versus Betamax. I feel like I was on the Betamax team and like, we just kind of like,
yeah,
but there should be an E in there and just lick our wounds. No, it's okay. With us today from rounding out the Dallas San Antonio College Station triangle, actually the Texas triangle is San Antonio to Houston to Dallas, but we're going to pretend like the triangle is San Antonio to College Station to Dallas. Three Texans on the show at once. Sábado gigante. No, it's actually not even Saturday. We've got Amin Rajan from AMAX Auto Insurance. What's up, Amin, from Dallas?
Hi there. I did not expect the tone of this podcast to be funny because we're talking about insurance, but I'm excited. Thank you so much for having me on the podcast.
Well, Amin, you know, take your work seriously, but not yourself, right? It's okay to have a little bit of fun. Insurance can be fun. Yeah. I mean, really interesting. That's for sure. And sometimes interesting in the not fun way. like right now, let's just say hello to all of our property insurance brethren in Florida again. I mean, seriously, it's been a tough time to be a property insurer. Adalia, is that how you say this hurricane? Adalia?
I don't know. I had somebody like trying to do the correct pronunciation on Instagram, and my Spanish is not good enough to even attempt to speak.
So all the property reinsurers are like puckering up. They're seeing headlines like hurricane expected to rapidly intensify before hitting Florida, and they're going, "No, why did we write that reinsurance?" And then Citizens is like, prepare yourself for 700,000 more policies.
Yeah.
Because pretty much Citizens is just picking up the entire state of Florida at this point. It's a mess. So it's intensifying Tuesday. It's expected to make landfall early Wednesday on Florida's northern Gulf Coast and Big Bend area as a Cat 3. Oh, man. It's expected to have huge storm surges and catastrophic impact for the Big Bend area. If you don't know that, that's like once you get past Panama City, it gets way less cool in Florida until you get all the way to like St. Pete because like the beaches aren't as nice. That's the area they're talking about. Now, there's people in that area that love that area because they're big into fishing and all kinds of other cool things, but it's not the area of the pristine beaches you usually hear about, although there will be consequences there. It's going to impact all kinds of airports and flights, and it's going to be storm surge. And theoretically, it's going to hit both major Florida universities at the same time, University of Florida and Florida State. So we will keep a very close eye on what's going on. It's also going to have some knock-on impacts into South Carolina. They've already declared a state of emergency there. So anyway, we usually don't talk about news. We used to talk about news on the show all the time, but you know, property insurance in Florida has been a sensitive topic lately. And we got another hurricane coming. So there you go. Rob, no hurricanes here. I can tell you that.
No hurricanes here. Yeah, more likely to have a wildfire, actually.
Yeah. Is it as dry in Dallas as it is in College Station? I mean.
Yeah, I think so. Very hot.
Man, it was 110 yesterday. Mm-hmm. Like yesterday, day before, whatever. 110. Man,
it's a pleasant 90 right now.
Yeah, I know. Like I was outside, I was like, oh man, it's like a balmy, cool 90 degrees. Get my long sleeves out. So let's talk about insurance instead of the weather. Although the two kind of go hand in hand a lot of times for property folks. I mean, let's talk about you for a second and your background before we jump into AMAX auto insurance. We're going to talk about AMAX insurance. But before that, we're going to talk about you. Where were you born and raised, and what did you dream of doing when you were a kid?
I was born in Karachi in Pakistan. I moved to States for schooling and somehow landed in insurance.
So you just glossed over about two decades of history in about 3 seconds. So Karachi through high school, then you came to the United States for college?
Yes.
And how on earth did you land at UHD, like University of Houston downtown, from Karachi?
I came to the University of Houston to study computer science. And yeah, that was my passion, startup in tech. And that's what I was doing. But I also ended up changing my field or area of study a little bit. I got my graduate degree in public policy from University of Texas at Dallas after that. And then another graduate degree from Georgetown in conflict resolution. So my academic interests have shifted quite a bit since I started my undergrad at UHD.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely got your smattering of education. I mean, two master's degrees and an undergrad. And look, public affairs is a really interesting, master's program to dive into, and you can use it in all different kind of fields. Yeah. You worked from 99 to 08 as a forecast manager for Convergys. What was that about?
Well, the Convergys was a sort of an outsourced consulting company for several other major companies. So I got to work with some really interesting accounts. I worked with Compaq Computer. You remember Compaq Computers back in the day?
They were a cult in Houston. Compaq was a cult in Houston until HP bought them and ripped the cult apart.
Yes. So worked on that account. I worked on HP.
A cult in a good way.
Yeah, yeah. Those were cool computers. You know, and it was a very fun job because my job was, my LinkedIn says forecast manager, which is where I landed. But for most of my time with them, my job was to sit in a research lab with a bunch of computers and networks, download anything and everything that I can think of. And the goal was to break the computers, break the system, break the network, invite the viruses, invite all sorts of trouble, and then spend days fixing those problems. And it was the most fun job I've ever had. I did the same for Microsoft, HP computers, those old school printers that Compaq used to make. And then did something similar with AT&T as well. So that first major experience that I had, I realized that I absolutely love to solve problems, especially the problems that I create myself, but love to solve problems. So that's where I got my start in the tech. But then I really did want to make a shift. I had a deep passion in working in some sort of a social impact space. I was really curious to learn more about different sectors, public sectors, nonprofit sectors. So I knew that I wanted to do something different for my graduate degree. So I landed into public affairs, learned about public sector at University of Texas. And while I was there, I had a good opportunity to work with various different Dallas-based nonprofits. I was working for a little bit with Boys and Girls Club, Catholic Charities, learned a lot about challenges of refugees in the Dallas area. I even ended up starting a small social impact enterprise, which created an awareness campaign by way of art to tell people about the cost of the human cost of war and conflict. So that was quite interesting, but the themes were quite similar. I mean, just sort of evaluating the challenges in industry, whether it be in a private sector, in tech, or whether it be in the social impact, societal challenges, and how can you find ways to sort of tackle those challenges. And that was quite interesting to me. So that's where my academic background sort of lies.
And you've been at AMAX for quite some time. You've had, it looks like, three different jobs there. Yeah. Let's just talk about that for a second. You know, you went through, working in corporate affairs and strategy and innovation. Now you're the chief strategy officer. I mean, tell us about AMAX for a second, because this is not a brand that I was familiar with before I saw you coming on the show.
Yeah, so while I was in the grad school, I took this job at a local insurance agency, which I never thought would become my career. But I was instantly drawn to it, mainly because the work felt meaningful. So Amex is a non-standard insurance agency. It serves the non-standard sector. These are the customers who don't necessarily have the best of credits. They come from middle to lower income demographics. So serving that segment felt quite meaningful because it is truly solving a sort of a public safety a challenge in the communities. So I was really drawn to that. And when I joined Amex back in 2008, it was a relatively a smaller agency and it had an appetite to grow. And I was trusted to figure out how to stand out from so many other small agencies that existed back then. The barrier to entry in the business was low, so competition was fierce. And it continues to be. There's a lot of non-standard agencies out there, but the landscape looks a little bit different now. But yeah, I went into it to study the market, understand the non-standard space, study the business, and I was instantly hooked. And here I am 15 years later. I've done, like you said, several things in the company, but mainly focusing on strategy and growth in various different aspects. I built, so right now we have over 200 locations in Texas. We recently acquired a company in California, so we have quite a bit of presence in California as well. So we've been around for quite some time, and it's been quite an interesting solving a problem with an innovation lens in this non-standard segment at Amex.
Awesome. Yeah, we'll talk more about that and like what the challenges are in the non-standard market and what that looks like from a technology perspective and how you've adjusted your user experience to that. I have a lot of questions around that. Before that, yeah. I know Rob, go ahead and take it away.
Yeah, so great to have you on. I mean, so I do want to dive into that non-standard market, right? Because it is so different than what most of us, myself working at USAA for 20 years, a kind of a typical standard rider. State Farm, Allstate, Nationwide, you know, Liberty Mutual, you name it, right? These are a lot of brands that we hear about all the time. And so there's not as much familiarity, I'm imagining, among our listeners about kind of the unique challenges. You touched on a little bit about the non-standard market, who you serve. But you've also said that the larger insurtech space has really not been fully serving the non-standard market because they've been focused on some of the, you know, the bigger personal lines, carriers and opportunities. So maybe you can elaborate just a little bit about kind of the unique challenges with the non-standard market, but also where those gaps are that InsurTech is not serving and maybe how you're looking to bridge some of those gaps.
I mean, I have been in this space for quite some time and always sort of trying to stay tuned with all the insurance incubators and new tech companies that come in. And I've definitely been noticing that non-standard is a pretty big market. Almost $80 billion premium gets written in that segment. So looking at that market is extremely important. I think most technological solutions that are coming in, they paint a wider brush and they look at trying to solve that same issues that a average consumer who can qualify for a policy from Progressive or Geico is needing. But the nuances of non-standards are a little bit different. Like I mentioned earlier, these are the customers that are not necessarily coming from the background where they would qualify for most of those, you know, standard insurance. They live in neighborhoods where automatically the ratings are designed in a way that you would have a higher premium because those zip codes might have a higher crime rate, carjackings. So that becomes a challenge. So when the platforms are created, let's say a customer acquisition platform or an e-commerce platform, it cannot use the same playbook as the Lemonades or Progressives. These customers sometimes are unbanked or underbanked. They have certain language requirements. They might be cash customers. So when you design the platform, you have to understand those needs to make sure how you can seamlessly meet those needs and not just create a linear process. And I think that's where the challenges are. The technologies who want to work in this space have to understand these customers deeply to be able to find the solutions for them.
That's interesting. And I noticed you had, you know, pretty heavy multilingual influence on the website. And look, you know, cash pay is a totally different challenge, right? They're going to walk into an agency and pay with cash. I mean, it's different. Let's talk about tech for you. You're leading innovation, right? And you're really driving strategy and innovation. So what are you doing that you think is really different than everybody else that's led to your rampant growth?
One of the interesting things that we have is, I mentioned earlier that we have 200 brick and mortar locations in Texas alone, and we're continuously growing, right? So this customer base that we have, they tend to want to do business in person. A large majority of them are walking into our offices still. So although we are investing quite a bit in our digital capabilities, we're also looking at what are some of the spaces for innovation in the brick and mortar locations, these outlets that we have. I was speaking at a conference recently alongside Stephanie Masha of John Hancock Vitality Program, which is a 100-year-old company. And she was talking about how they use the customer touch points to impact the health and well-being of their customers, and they're seeing phenomenal results. So we have similar philosophy. Our brick and mortar locations are our community outlets where customers can come in, make their payments, but also get to enjoy several appreciation events that we can put together. So now innovation opportunities lies in how to use those customer touch points to improve retention. So in the industry where customers tend to switch their insurance very often, we use these touch points to see how we can learn more about the customers, tend to their needs so that they will retain for a longer period of time. And they will also bring their friends and family into our offices as well. These locations also serve as an extension of our workforce. We have about 1,000 agents that are employed by AMAX that work in these offices. But they have capabilities to be able to serve not only the customers they walk into their offices, but the customers that could be 100 miles away. So we're providing them the same tools that we would provide to our e-commerce team or virtual call center team. So they have the same tools to provide nudges for their customers. They have the same capabilities to be able to use our customer relationship manager to be able to, you know, provide any sort of touch points that our customers are needing that they're more likely to respond to. So we're innovating not only in an online space or creating digital touch points, but we're also looking at our brick and mortar locations to also be our small mini innovation hubs.
Do you have any locations that are like experimental locations where you try things first?
Okay, so we have a separate brand. That's a front brand that we play with. Another insurance company called Alpa. It is our secondary brand. We have a lot of fun with that brand. We have about 20 locations, and we tend to use that as our innovation hub. So we implement new software technologies that get implemented in that smaller segment first, and we test and try that before we scale it into the large 200-plus locations at AMAX. So yes, we do that.
So you created literally an entirely separate brand, website, signage, locations, not just to experiment, right? Like you wanted to try to hit a different market segment with it?
Yeah. I mean, that brand is absolutely designed to attract more of a younger audience. It's very fresh, very hip. It has its own character. And even the internal culture sort of reflects that new age customers. So yes, it is designed to go after a different customer segment, but the tools of business tend to be very similar. So it does allow us that space for experimentation and also be able to tap into a newer market.
So have the policyholder age brackets actually lined up with who you targeted for the age brackets to be?
Oh yeah. Our digital touch points. So that's one of the things at AMAX, because we've been at it for quite some time and having that sort of a deeper understanding of customers, we've been able to perfect the targeting of our certain customers. So we collect a lot of data on this. We make sure that we're going after the right customers using the right channels. So certain media channels will attract certain kind of customers. And we do exactly that. I know, Rob, you're in that space. I was looking into that. You're curating a certain content to attract the customers. So we very much use the same science to go after certain targeted segments.
Yeah, I actually want to follow up. Maybe you can go a little bit deeper even, I mean, on the leveraging data and analytics to better understand the customer needs. Because, you know, I'm thinking about this and it's like, you know, part of the challenge with non-standard is, as you mentioned, you may not have some of the data points that you typically would be used to. You mentioned them being unbanked or underbanked. You mentioned the lack of a, you know, no credit, thin credit file, or poor credit score. So are there some kind of unique data points? You know, how do you go deep and kind of have that blend of really knowing your customer from a data and analytics perspective on this fairly diverse population that maybe traditional carriers are struggling to understand through their traditional methods?
I think one of the keys here is, and I think it should work in standard or non-standard space, agents and brokers have quite a few touch points directly with the customers. So the data sets that they collect are quite important. But then carriers on the other side who manage the policies tend to have a different side of facts about the customers. And I feel that this partnership between carriers and agents can be very lethal in collecting good amount of data on these customers. And we tend to do that quite a bit. So, you know, in this middle to low income demographic, the biggest challenge that carriers oftentimes have, the reason why they actually use the agency model to capture this customer segment is because they want to mitigate risk. There's a high chance of fraud in this space. So carriers tend to be very nervous in going direct to consumers or providing digital means of collecting the customer data. So what we've been able to do at AMAX is, yes, we have brick and mortar outlets, and we use all the traditional means of selling a policy, which requires customers to walk into our offices, us validating all the documents and agents personally looking at that, or going outside the office and taking pictures of the cars to make sure we do all of that stuff. And that's traditionally has been the way non-standard business or non-standard carriers have been comfortable doing business with the agents. But what we have also been trying to do is we realize that not all customers in the segments are the same. More and more non-standard customers, they're displaying the same exact needs as more of the other customers. They like to do business online. They might want to chat with us, or they might want to give us a call. And we may never see the customer or customer's car, but they still want to be insured. So what we started doing is we started, innovating or started experimenting with processes and various different technologies to see how we can overcome some of the challenges that the carriers might have. And that has been one of the ways that we've been able to sort of advocate on customers' behalf to our carriers. So I'll give you an example. For a while, we were working on a e-commerce platform where customers can come in and they can finish all the journey from quoting to the buying online, which is a common place in the standard space, but non-standard has been lagging. And the biggest challenge that we had is carriers did not like for us to sell any policies that we have not seen personally. So what we did is we did a bit of a test. We convinced the carriers to do some tests with us. And for a period of time, we sold policies end-to-end online. It required processes in which we collected the information. We partnered up with a technology partner who used certain technology, AI technologies, to remove human from marking the e-signature columns that customers need to sign, validating pictures to make sure that the customers are not submitting wrong or old pictures. So we did that all by technology for a period of time, and we looked to see what sort of risks that were associated with that. We looked at the loss ratio of those policies and compared it with the policies that we were selling in our offices. What we found is that there was no difference in the loss ratio that we were collecting in by digital means versus the traditional means. And now that we have this process built out, we've been able to improve that more and more, and we are confident that we might be able to get better loss ratios or better success in these customers and retain these customers even better compared to the customers of walking into our offices. So, and once the carriers see that, that has been that data point, that has been the way that we can sort of continue to advocate and get more and more carriers to come in and do business with us by digital means. So these are some of the processes that we have done, and I call it like advocating on customers' behalf to be able to progress the whole industry.
Excellent. Great, great description. So let's just talk about looking forward now. What does the next few years look like? What do you think is coming into personal lines auto that is going to really change the game, or what are you trying to prepare for? Let's talk about whether it's a technology innovation, a regulatory change. There were a lot of predictions by this year, including by Peter Diamandis. I went to an Abundance 360 conference by Peter Diamandis, who predicted that we would be all self-driving cars by now, that car ownership would be beginning to die out by now. Seriously, by 2023, I still have the graphic. I mean, there were a lot of predictions that by 2023, things would be radically different, and you know, ride sharing would be pervasive, and it would all be driverless, and none of us would own cars, and parking garages would be dead. And I mean, the reality is the commercial office market is dead. People are still driving the snot out of their cars and buying them like crazy. Auto dealers who were supposed to be out of business or had record profits the last 3 years. So, I mean, what do you think now, knowing what's with the current conditions, what does the auto market look like in the next 2 or 3 years? And what innovations do you think are coming down the pipe that could change things?
So what's been interesting in non-standard space is these predictions sort of look very different in this market segment. During the COVID years, when more and more customers were working from home, they were driving less, they were not on the road, the customers that we serve actually were going to work. They had to go. So they were part of that essential worker segment. These are the nurses. These are the construction workers. So we're working with those customer segments that had to get to work, and they were the one that were driving the cars. So their insurance needs did not change as much as the average driver on the road. These customers do need the cars, they need the vehicles. They're not going out and investing in the latest and greatest EVs. They're not necessarily utilizing to the same degree the ride shares like the other customers are. So these are the customers that have different needs. And what I'm looking forward to is that the industry starts to sort of pay attention. Because several years that I've been looking at and observing the industry, I really feel that the non-standard space is largely overlooked, and the potential to explore is phenomenal. So I want more technologies, insurtechs, to really think about what they can do in this space. Now, there's some notable companies that are innovating in this space, like Loop Insurance out of Austin, Texas. They're creating new pricing algorithms, which are designed to take away bias. If you design something like that, then you're starting to blur the lines between the standard and non-standard. So I'm looking forward to seeing more and more innovation like that come through that looks at insurance rating differently than the traditional means. I know there has been a lot of buzz about database usage-based insurance. That has a huge potential in a non-standard space. Because the customers may be living in zip codes with high crime rate does not necessarily mean that they are bad drivers. So they might qualify for a cheaper insurance if the insurance is rated on the drive on usage rather than where they live. Similarly, another company, our friends at Sigo Seguros, another Austin-based company, they're designing platform
who,
that
yeah, who we had on the show, yeah. We had Sigo Seguros on here, yeah.
Yeah, so that's amazing. So they're doing some amazing work. They're looking at certain customer segments and trying to solve problems for them. And I feel that instead of looking at industry as a whole, this market segment requires some innovation in this. And I'm really hoping that I see something. I'm going to the InsurTech this year again, and I'm going to be looking for partners and try to see if there's people that can work with us or they can work with their own and create some sort of a synergistic partnership to understand this market segments and just come up with some cool new text, cool new solutions. And that could be the next thing.
Absolutely. So, well, you heard it here. For those of you who are listening who want to meet new people at InsurTech Connect, he said he's going to be there and looking. Rob, you want to wrap us up with a closing comment or question?
Yeah. I mean, just to kind of get us out, this, you know, you've often talked about like having a disruptive mindset and kind of working with executives and trying to rally folks around going beyond maybe the traditional conservative views of insurance. I'm sure the non-standard market being in that place, you kind of necessarily have to be maybe a little bit more of an out of the box thinker, but just, you know, what thoughts do you have for our audience that are maybe looking to disrupt within their firms? You know, how do you approach it? Any advice that you might have?
See, my approach has always been to prove a concept by way of data or by way of various different pilots to test it out. And it always has worked. Of course, it helps to work with like-minded people, executives who are open to trying and testing new things. That's always helpful. But there is room for technological solutions, and it is lucrative. This is just because the market segment serves a certain customer segments does not mean that this is the market that should be overlooked. There's a lot of potential opportunities here, and I'm sure Amex is not the only company that is looking to innovate and looking to partner with InsurTechs. The openness is there. I think we just have to make sure that the right minds meet at the right place to make sure that they can work together.
Awesome. Great great closing comments, and thank you, Amin, for joining us. Rob, thanks as always for being my illustrious co-host.
Always. Happy to co-pilot with you, James.
Awesome. Love it. And Amin, thanks for joining us from Dallas. Appreciate you being on the show.
Thank you, guys.
And that is a wrap for another episode of the InsurTech Geek Podcast. Thanks for tuning in today and geeking out with our interview with Amin Rajan from Amex Auto Insurance. See you next time. The InsurTech Geek Podcast, powered by JB Knowledge, jbknowledge.com. It's all about technology that's transforming and disrupting the insurance world. I've been your host, James Benham. That's jamesbenham.com, with co-host Rob Galbraith at endofinsurance.com. And thank you for joining us today. Look forward to talking with you soon. We're taking you on a journey through insurance tech. So enjoy the ride and geek out.